Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Ken, Ken Brown, the Cash Entrepreneur. Your, you hear me, you got the music going, but your Cash Entrepreneur, your Chief Profitability Officer. You hear me? How you guys doing? Go ahead and cut the music off, die it down a little bit, because we're about to talk a little bit about investments, business opportunities, and the like. Welcome. This is Ken, your Passion Entrepreneur, your Chief Profitability Officer. Thank you for listening in. What we show you is how to maximize your profits and business opportunities. We teach you the best practices for profitability and share with you new ideas and strategies to take your business to the next level. We're talking about business opportunities in Cape Verde and Africa. Get there before it's too late. On the show, we've got Mike McNair of McNair International. You can check out his website at McNairInternational.com. That's www.McNairInternational.com. He's going to Africa. Mike's going to talk about his passion, the opportunities in alternative energy, and his energy company, and why he's doing business in Africa. Then next we'll have Nelson George from the Global Entrepreneurial Endeavors. His website is www.glowlee.us. So he's going to talk about the opportunities in Cape Verde. He is flying in to Boston, so he's scheduled to come on about 6:30, and we'll see what happens there. But in the meantime, we've got Mike McNair. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderful today, Ken, and thank you for having me today.
No problem, no problem. Mike McNair. So who is Mike McNair?
Well, Mike McNair, first, is a very grounded and solid individual who just, A, loves God, and B, loves serving my family as well as the needs of mankind. And I have a tremendous love for the science and technology industry.
So what's your background, Mike?
I'm a research chemist by profession, and I've worked with major corporations designing products from automotive applications to various types of substrates for the metals industry, the paper industry, and just industrial analytical chemistry in general, the applications area. So I'm a real technology person who loves the passion of science.
Okay, let's talk about passion for a minute, because I always like to ask, and we had an opportunity to talk on Thursday at an event, and I was really, really impressed with how passionate you are about your business. So if I ask you the question, my favorite question I always ask people on the calls, what is your passion, Mike?
Ken, that's a very easy question. My key passion is people and designing new technologies and better forms of products that makes life even better for those in our ever-changing world. I love the alternative energy area because we're right now on the cutting edge of different types of renewable fuels and getting away from petroleum products such as our gasoline products that has been creating a ruckus actually in our world.
Who are you telling?
So that kind of drives me in addressing a lot of the issues of global warming that we're dealing with and trying to drive down some of these gasoline prices that we're dealing with here.
So let me ask you. So we're going to get into your products and services. So there is alternative ways. I mean, we can take the U.S. off of gas? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely, Ken. And a lot of our third world countries are already in the mainstream of doing just that from the various natural resources that they have. We have, as Americans, have been so heavily relying on the petroleum products from our gasoline and crude oils until we have really kind of just let the natural resources, all alternative renewable natural resources, take a back seat. So, yes, we have quite a bit in the area of agriculture that we can draw alternative products from that can replace a lot of the petroleum products we now use.
So how did we get into this mess? I've been doing some research on this, but from your vantage point, how did we become so dependent on energy and oil, and what happened there?
Well, you know, our nation has a history, Ken, of oil being a source of not only a natural resource from the Mother Earth, but also deriving from where I'm actually heading to, which is the continent of Africa, where, you know, they are very rich also in oil, as well as the Middle East. And we have become gluttonous in utilizing our oil resources as opposed to looking to other resources, alternative resources, such as solar, agricultural resources, and renewable fuels. So we've become somewhat stagnated and lazy when it comes down to our science and invention in renewable resources until global warming forced us into this arena.
Okay, we can talk about global warming here for a second, but I think this is my two cents, is that I think that we have not built any refineries in, I think, 25, 30 years or so. That's a problem. We've not taken advantage of our resources here and drilling what we could drill.
Yes.
I'm talking about Florida, and I'm talking about, you know,
Texas
and Alaska. And so, and when it's a matter of, supply and demand, you know,
right.
the more demand, the higher the price is going to be. So, and I think this puts us in a very bad situation, for maybe good for business people, but worse for America, is when we're dependent on Mideast oil. That's not good. But you know, if you want to comment on that, that's
I would
fine.
Like
I, want
to, I would like yeah, to add ahead. A point there that sometimes we tend to take and just let go up underneath the rug, and that is a lot of our. You ask the question, what put us in this position to be so heavily reliant on oil? It is my own personal belief that the political landscape of America has actually kind of ushered in us being in this state of so heavily dependent, because it was always from Texas, Alaska, and all of the various other. We are also rich here in our own continent as far as having oils and wells and reservoirs. But it was only for the rich and the mighty. So the political landscape actually forced us into this position that we're in.
And I am all for one in favor of alternative sources of energy. I think we're really backwards, and we should have been doing this a long, long time ago.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And, you know, so I think if we can, there's opportunities here. And let's talk about the products and services. First of all, why did you decide to start McNair International?
Okay, I'm glad you asked
story
that
behind
question.
That.
Yeah. The reason why I am a firm, as I said when I was telling you about who I am, I'm a firm believer in taking leaps of faith. And when you, I'm not only one who talk about God, but I try to make God a part of the holistic part of who I am, whether it's in my worship, in my business ethics, as well as in my business pursuit. If he say he could move a mountain, I'm one who would take him at his word and say, Father God, let me.
Where you want to move it?
Yeah, exactly. Let's take it. Yeah, where does this belong, and what part should I play in making this happen? So I'm one who will take a leap of faith, and I've been working for major corporations and making them billions of dollars in a lot of my inventions and a lot of products that I will analyze and discover and patent for their benefit, but I would just receive just the morsels that fall from the table. But
you get a paycheck, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Pat on the back.
And possibly a bonus at the end of the year, depending upon how the profit sharing margins went. But I did, I was out this particular weekend, my wife and I, and we were looking at these portable ventless fireplaces, and I was challenged by the proprietor who owned this particular store in the mall, and I told him, I'll buy one of your units, but I'll make my own fuel, because I love that the ingenuity of inventing different types of competitive products, and I just saw that as another challenge. And I invented a particular fuel back in 1989, and I was challenged by...
You invented a fuel.
Yes, I am a patent inventor of fuels and alternative products. And my first product was called Silent Glow, which is a fireplace fuel that burns 100% clean in a portable ventless fireplace that does not need any ventilation to the outside, which only emits water vapors. And from there, that was the birth child of my other products that came thereafter, such as Unstir for the home, hospitality and restaurant food product warming and cooking.
Wow. And so so how's it going so far with your company?
We're doing excellent right now. We have been invited to third world countries. I'm leaving actually this coming week for Africa to meet with 15 different countries. And
can you take me with you?
Say that again, man. Yeah, and I'm excited about this because not only will my products be targeted for home heating and food warming and light illuminations where there are communities that are underprivileged and undeveloped, it will be utilized in many, many other ways in which here they're luxuries in America, but there they will be utilized as necessities in various places such as Liberia where they do not have electricity. We will design our Kindle Your Flame, which is a light source. So there's a whole array of products that we can spin off in the alternative energy fuel resource arena.
Let's talk about that, but let me ask the question. The first question is, we've talked about it a little bit, but what is alternative energy?
Okay, alternative energy is our fuel products that are bringing us away from what we know as petroleum products, fossil fuels, burning woods, where we're going from any type of a fossil fuel to a natural resource such as grain, corn. Our particular product is primarily made of ethanol, which is contrived from both corn as well as sugarcane. And in our tropical areas, these are very large natural resources that bring forth a tremendous yield. For one, Brazil, as we well know, is one of the world's largest ethanol producer of sugarcane, from sugarcane.
Is that right?
Absolutely. And right there alone, because it's a clean burning type of a fuel alternative that does not pollute our ozone and create to the growing problem of global warming, this is definitely a great biofuel advantage or alternative.
So Brazil is doing it, and you're saying America should also be investing in alternative.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Our president, I just left a national restaurant show in last May, and I was given word that President Bush had just left Brazil now because all eyes are focused now on the fuel alternative in which ethanol can produce and yield. And in Congress, this is one of the key bullet points that America is now trying to, you know, pull their bootstraps up and catch up with the rest of the third world countries in that area.
Well, I have heard some, and I'll be a devil's advocate here. When you're using corn, people have said in America you're using too much corn and the price of corn goes up. What is your response to that?
So, yeah. You know, a good question, Ken. The response to it is ethanol can be developed from three primary fuel sources. So we're not dependent on any particular one.
This is so interesting.
Yes. We have corn as one source, sugarcane as another, molasses as another. And we also right now are in the process of developing ethanol, which is cellulosic ethanol from municipal waste. So,
you were talking
trash,
about that.
That's correct. At our last the last evening, you know, and this right here. So what we have here then is we have agricultural products, our corn and our sugar, sugar cane, which are a part of our food chain, which we the cost can be kind of governed by the escalation of it going up or down, whereby with the municipal trash, that's a global thing. We're going to always have
a whole bunch
that.
Of trash out there.
Exactly. And now we have a process where we can convert that municipal trash into cellulosic ethanol for our automotive products.
Oh, man. So when you're talking about biofuels, is this a biofuel?
That's absolutely correct. You're right on point there. These are your biofuels, which will be a major, and right now as we speak, E85 is our product, and E85 is one of the products that will be used in our flexible fuel vehicles, which they're also currently offering at the automotive shows across the nation.
So how would you define biofuels? And then I want to get into what the opportunities are for alternative energy. So what is a biofuel?
Okay, a biofuel is a biological fuel which is made directly from the natural resources. Actually, your ethanol from corn is a biofuel.
Okay.
Because it's something biologically grown as opposed to a fossil fuel as an oil or petroleum product. Okay. These are fuels that we can grow that come from plant and vegetation life.
So trash wouldn't be a biofuel?
Absolutely. Well, it falls under a cellulosic, which is one that is going to actually be developed. So you have, like, with your methanol, you have a methanol alcohol, which is like a man-made one, which is it's man-made engineer. Then you have ethanol, which is a natural, which comes from your sugar and your corn, okay? And the cellulosic will come from trash, which goes through a chemical process very much similar to that of a methanol.
Wow. Now, are you going to give me a quiz after this, or the listeners that are listening? We're not required to take a quiz on
this. No, you're not, but you're asking excellent questions, and I'm certain that it will you know, better enlighten those about what's happening with us getting away from the petroleum gasolines and moving more so towards the ethanol products that they see right now at the gas pumps.
Wow. And so let's talk about the business opportunity and alternative products and services. So where's the opportunity? Why are you so excited about this opportunity?
I am so excited, Ken, because ethanol right now is getting its rightful due place in the arena of a fuel and a viable alternative fuel source. And throughout the various third world countries, Nicaragua, I'm getting a lot of contact and communications from a lot of third world countries in regard to opportunities of investment. And I have been invited by the Department of Agriculture to through the United States government to represent.
Really?
Yes. Of 19 corporations that have been selected to travel on a trade and investment mission to Accra, Ghana. And there we will be trading and investing in various economic development projects there, meeting with the embassies and heads of states so that we can in turn bring America into the mainstream. Because one thing that we do know, Ken, China is a very advanced country, and they have a very advanced government where they take advantage and they have that foresight of moving forward quickly and seizing investment opportunities.
They have no choice, actually.
Huh?
They have no choice because they lack natural resources.
Exactly.
So they've got to go out.
Exactly.
And that's why they're putting some influence or making some investments in Africa, because there's a lot of natural resources there. So they're being smarter about this.
That's absolutely
correct. Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, not at all. But and you're absolutely correct. And see, this is why right now we have so many foreign auto dealers putting a crunch on our American auto manufacturers because we tend to fall behind when it comes down to looking at where the best investment opportunities are. Where do we put our best investment dollars, and where are the resources to bring them two together and make a good investment deal or plan?
So can you really make money in alternative energy products?
Oh, absolutely. There's no question to it. I have several meetings scheduled even next week for investors who are interested in looking at getting a piece of the pie at the early stage, at the groundbreaking of it. Because, see, this is not new to the international arena. This is very much new to America because of the political restraints that have been on us because of our dependency on petroleum products and gas.
You're talking blind. We've been blind.
Yes, we have. We have been hoodwinked.
Yeah, hoodwinked. Oh, I've heard that before, but I'm not going to go there.
You'll get it.
So you're going over to so you got investors with your company. So how much money are we talking about that you're looking that people are looking forward to invest with you or in your products and services?
Right now we're looking in excess between $30 and $50 million. This is going to be a very conservative investment for such a massive project and undertaking because we're looking to actually partner and build plants. And the interesting thing, it doesn't take a whole lot of money that one would think to get these operations up and running because they're simple products and it's a simple process, but it gives you a great investment return on your dollar.
Okay, so you're saying it's multi-million dollar,
This is a multi-million dollar project, but the benefits and the incentives that's up the road far outweigh the initial cash outlay that any investor.
Let me check my bank statement. I don't believe I have $30 million in my account. However, what would be a minimum investment that you're looking? Somebody wants to come to you and support you in your efforts.
McNair International is not only focused on cash investments only, because we are not only this is a mission and a vision purpose of being a blessing to nations. We know that whenever we remain focused in our mission purpose, we know that the dollars or the resources will always be there. So we're not only looking for cash investments, but...
Okay, so how much in cash? I mean, minimum, write you a check for $1,000 and expect to return?
There's a place for anyone. There's a place in our organization, Ken, for anyone who can visualize the dream that we are in trouble from a global warming standpoint. And McNair has a philosophy, we take care of people who help take care of us. We make it, whatever your cash incentive or your investment may be, we will welcome it, and we will find a way of making it a win-win for us both.
Oh, that's well said. So you're taking checks and money orders?
Right? Absolutely. We'll take checks, we'll take money orders. We won't release any stocks or shares until we check clear.
Okay. So we're talking with Mike McNair of McNair International. We're talking about investment opportunities, business opportunities in Africa. So how did you discover the opportunities in Africa?
By building relationships. You hear of networking and net weaving, Ken.
Yes. I do that a lot on Tuesdays from 8 to 9.
Yes, you do. And I'm glad you did because I've met some strategic partners and people through your networking opportunities that you afforded me, and I'm very thankful for it. But I built back in 2007, I was able to attend the National Restaurant Association, which occurs each year in Chicago. That's one of the largest trade shows next to that of the Home Building Show that travels. And I met some heads of state there at that particular show. They were very much impressed with the products and the services. And not only that, but it was the passion that they saw and the sincerity.
I love that word, passion.
Yeah, the sincerity that it wasn't just alone only about profit only. It was about helping people become better for tomorrow. And that's where I come from. I come from being a blessing where I can, and in turn being blessed in being a blessing. And that's my philosophy.
Yeah, that's very inspiring. So, so you got the opportunities. Now you're headed over to Africa. You said this week or next week?
This week, this coming week. Yeah, I'll be taking off this week for Africa, and I'll be there up until about for a week to 10 days, and perhaps I may have to travel on to extend the stay and travel on to some of the other countries to look at do some feasibility studies.
Okay, great. So would it be improper for us to ask you where you're going?
Yes, absolutely.
What countries are you headed to?
Yes, the countries that I'll be heading to, first I'm starting out in Accra, Ghana, which is the capital, and that's where the Trade Investment Summit will meet. And from there, I'll be meeting with Togo, Benin.
Togo.
Yes, Togo, Benin, Nigeria, Burkina Faso, Mali, Liberia, Cameroon, Sierra Leone, Dakar, Senegal, and Cape Verde.
All right. Man, that's fantastic. Is this your first time going to Africa?
Absolutely it is, Ken. This is my first time, and this is a dream come true.
Talk about that.
Yeah, this is like no other business trip. I have traveled extensively throughout the world on an international scale and throughout most of Europe. But going back to the motherland and having something of substance to take to the table and say, this is for our people there. I take pride in being an African-American corporation, and I'm certain I'm looking forward to the reception that I'll receive. They even have a reception being hosted for our corporation at the embassy there in Ghana. And the ambassador of Ghana it will be hosting that in honor of the 19 American corporations. So this is a very exciting time for me, and it's a dream come true.
Okay, so you're going to Africa, and what specific products are you going to you didn't mention it earlier, but I want to come back to that now. So what energy products or services are you going to be presenting?
Well, what the products that I will be presenting will be two. The area that I'm going to is primarily tropical, so they do not need to utilize the product Silenglow, which is for a home heating. But they will be taking advantage of Unster and Unster Wick, and these particular products are for food cooking and food warming, and we will also diversify that product for lighting where they do not have electricity.
Hold on for a second. So what do you mean? How does your products work with, you said cooking and lighting?
Yes, cooking and illumination of homes. A lot of their homes, Ken, are, from what I understand, are huts, and you can go from mansionist beautiful homes down to very meager living situations in various rural and in the bush area. And our product can be actually designed for the need of that particular section or region in which we're targeting. So we will have targeted marketing strategies for a particular given demographics.
So your product provides light?
Lighting. Heat.
Illumination. Okay.
Heat in the evening when it's cool.
Really?
Cooking, where they can cook from. Utilize it cooking, emergency products for if they have any type of tropical storms and need emergency light. So it's a variety of ways in which you can utilize our products.
Okay, go ahead.
As well as we will be offering for their trucks and their fleets of automobiles our E85, which is the flexible fuel vehicle.
Wow! So what's the market for this? I mean, in terms of dollar amount. I mean, why are you going to Africa? How come you can't do it here?
Why not do it
in the U.S.?
The political framework here, and being that everything here in America, Ken, sad to say, we are just starting to realize that we have a global warming issue.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it goes back to our early part of our conversation where it seems as though we have been somewhat hoodwinked in believing that we became so heavily reliant upon petroleum products. until and we know that you need ventilation for them. You need the kerosenes and all of that, the house fires, the asphyxiations that they cause. Our products address all of them in a way that it's very economical. It makes good sense. It's clean and it's healthy for the family as a whole.
So there's a big market in Africa for lighting, illumination, heating, and is there an estimation on how big that market is?
Oh, this is a multi-billion-dollar market here, Ken.
Billion. I was thinking about millions, but you're saying billion.
Yeah, this is a billion. Yes, fuel on any level is a multi-billion-dollar industry. Okay, and that's why we have shifted our focus from our commodity products, was in the millions. And our commodity products, we're talking in the hundreds and hundreds of millions for our chafing fuel, restaurant supplies, etc. That's in the hundreds of millions. But when we talk about fuel, we're talking about in the billions. I just received an email about a company that has also signed on Kroger's, who will they're already now pumping alternative fuel from ethanol in the vehicles and servicing the various new fleet line.
Wow, we're talking with Mike McNair, McNair International, www.McNairInternational.com. So you mentioned the U.S., the United States.
Yes,
being political, but in Africa, isn't it political too?
They have their political challenges that they're dealing with, but at the same token, they're open to explore what types of opportunities that they can bring new investment, new dollars in, and utilize the best of their resources.
Okay, so what about there's some investment risk here, isn't it? What about? I always think about the movie Hotel Rwanda.
Yes.
What about the stability of these countries, the political? What about the military taking over? And, you know, because some people, I'm not sure if I want to invest. I know America. I know the United States. But you go to Africa, it's a different country,
yes.
Different people.
Yes. It's so, always, Ken, that's a good question, but there's always risk. Being a businessman in any area that you go into, you're going to encounter a certain level of risk. But you have to sometimes calculate the risk and also who you're doing business with. And from my standpoint, I'm dealing with heads of states. I'm dealing with over 100 private and public business men and women there. And the key here is partnership, who you partner with. We're not going in to take over a country. We're going in to partner with a country. And that is a key difference. And who you partner with are natives of the particular countries who have controlling powers. And that's what we are going to take advantage of when we go on this particular trip next week.
This is so interesting. Do you mind staying on a little bit longer? Because this is fascinating.
Absolutely.
Do you have any more time? Okay. Let's talk about partnerships and alliances. What's your ideal partnership, your ideal alliance? Because I know a business person, I really don't like working with the government because you could spend so much time and so much money and effort and not come out with anything. So how do you avoid that? You're going in here. So how do you define the ideal strategic partnership, the ideal alliance for you, if you wanted to give some advice to people that want to look at working with you or want to go on their own?
I think the key is relationship building, Ken. And everyone who may run per se, for an example, the White House may not always be in your best interest to partner with per se the White House, but there could be people who make up the surrounding party of the White House that you could actually do business on a private sector level, and we see a lot of that today, even in our American economic structure here. Various private interest groups that you will do business with, and the key is diversifying so that you don't put all your eggs in no one basket, whether it's all government or private sector. But the key word is diversifying your investments and your assets.
Okay, so when you say I see that we've got Nelson on the call, and we're going to bring him in a few minutes, but diversification, what do you mean by that for a business person?
Not focusing on any one particular market, but having various types of niches that you can actually draw from, build, and partner strategic relationships with. And that's what McNair is going to do. This will be an educational learning experience with me, for me, Ken. When I go over next week, I will learn a lot. I will share. I will listen to what their needs are. And the key is I'm coming in to listen as a partner as well as a servant, that I may be a blessing, not to take over, not to control, but for us to make it a win-win for both the U.S. as well as the various countries that I'll be meeting with.
Well, and I would you come back and share with the listeners and the audience of E3C what you learned and what your experiences were?
I would love to. That's all part of the purpose of my going, and again, that's what I'm here. I'm here to serve and to be a blessing.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you one more question, and I'm going to bring Nelson George on with Global Entrepreneurial Endeavors. But what are the people like in Africa? What's the culture like in Africa? Is this your first time going over there?
That I'm doing a lot of research on, but, you know, it's textbook. Until I get there, and that's what makes this trip here, Ken, so much different from any a lot of my other trips throughout Europe. You know, that whenever I go to Europe, I'd always like to go into the communities where the real people live, so I can put a pulse on what's really happening, and bring back something of substance. And that's what I'm looking forward to doing on this trip coming up next week, is going to the various countries, visiting the various people, sitting down, letting them teach and tell me what it is their concerns are, what their needs are, and in turn, I share the same with them and see how we can take and mesh our worlds and bring them together and make it a win-win for us both.
Man, I wish you much success in your endeavors in Africa, and you'll come back. Do you want to hang on? I'm going to bring
Absolutely.
On Nelson George with Global Entrepreneurial Endeavors. Nelson, I'm going to put you on in a few minutes. There's a lot of noise out there, but let's see if we can bring him in. Nelson George, how are you?
It's not bad. It's actually Nelson
okay. Greger. Who am I speaking with?
It's actually Nelson Greger, not Nelson George. But I'm
okay,
good.
Nelson. Okay. Okay, Nelson, how are you?
Pretty good, and you?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. Now, on the call, if you've been listening in, we've got Mike McNair of McNair International. Now, we're going to bring you on. And we're going to talk about Cape Verde, because you're doing some things in Cape Verde. What is the history of Cape Verde?
Cape Verde, basically, it was used back about 500 years ago as a slave trade hub transshipment location by mainly the Portuguese as they were colonizing Africa. And until then, there were very little inhabitants on the island. But since then, Cape Verde has come a long way. And in 1975, actually, it got its independence from Portugal. And then currently, it's one of the, since 1975, about 30-something years ago, it's currently one of the model countries in Africa.
Really? So, do you have ties to Cape Verde yourself?
My parents are from Cape Verde Island, and Cape Verde is, for those of you not familiar, it's about right off the coast of Senegal, west coast of Africa, and its location, geographic location, is perfect for transshipment, and that's one of the things that Cape Verde currently is working on to, again, in this global market, be a transshipment hub where things are made in one place, assembled in another place, and sold in another place, in another country. Again, Cape Verde is transforming its seaports. It's an island nation consisting of 10 islands. One of them is inhabited right now, and they are transforming all their seaports to be able to become a transshipment hub for that area and the region.
So what's the culture like there on these islands?
The culture is really a fusion of culture between African and European. It's about the same type of culture you would find in the Caribbean islands, in Barbados, Jamaica, and any of those. Basically, it's a lot of island lifestyle African beats mixed into it, and some of course some remnants of some European culture also.
Wow! And we have to for the listeners that are hearing the background noise, you're probably at the airport somewhere, so we have to apologize for the background noise. But so, how would you describe the people of Cape Verde?
The people of Cape Verde are very friendly. They just enjoy life, the easy island lifestyle. They relaxed atmosphere. They have a very high literacy rate, and in a 78%, I believe, last I looked.
And, you said 70 over 70%?
Yes, it's closer to
70. Wow. That's pretty good. Okay. And so what about the cost? Is the cost as expensive to live in on these islands?
No. The cost is actually very, very affordable. That's one of the things that makes it so attractive, especially currently. There's a boom of European tourists flocking to Cape Verde because the normal vacation spots like the Canary Islands and Madeira and these other islands located in the Atlantic, they're becoming very expensive, and of course Cape Verde as an emerging country, a developing country, you can get a lot more for your money there, and also not as crowded, not as developed as these other islands and vacation spots that I mentioned.
Okay, so what in terms of dollar amount, what would it cost to live there? I mean, can you give us an example of a hamburger or a stay in a hotel or
in any place you go, you can go from moderate to elaborate.
Okay.
But in a moderate, basically cost of living, about $1,000 to $1,500, you will live very comfortably on Cape Verde Island.
Really? Oh man, I'll book my flight now. Okay, we're talking with Nelson Greger. Nelson Greger of Global Entrepreneurial Endeavors. So why are you excited about Cape Verde and the opportunities there, the business opportunities?
Well, I'm excited for one. My parents are from there originally. For two. The opportunities there are endless. The growth and development that are projected over the next 7 to 10 years are in the $30 billion.
$30 billion, not millions, but billions.
Billion, that's correct.
That's impressive. And so what areas of opportunity are there for people that want to make that business investment?
Of course, Cape Verde right now is becoming a touristic hotspot, especially for your European market. So the development of condominiums, resorts, hotels, and all the infrastructure that supports it, there are opportunities in numerous areas to include, transportation, shipping, IT development, management, hotel supplies, construction equipment. I mean, we can go on and on, but particularly everything that is currently, all the infrastructure that's currently in Cape Verde is not sufficient to support all the asset development in the next 7 to 10 years.
Wow. So how much money are you looking for? Because let's talk about your company. Your company is Global Entrepreneurial Endeavors. What does your company do? What does that mean?
Yeah. We're involved in a few areas of development in Cape Verde. We're doing some condominium development, some hotel development. Most importantly, right now, in partnership, it's a private-public partnership with the Cape Verde government and some businessmen there. We're doing a inter-island transportation to connect all the islands for passenger and cargo and help in a development phase of Cape Verde. And then also doing a fishing project Cape Verde and its waters are rich in fish, particularly tuna, which pretty much is getting extinct in all the other parts of the world, Southeast Asia, Europe, and the U.S. So we're working in conjunction with the government for some preservation and trying to put some things in place that will not just fish out the ocean, but also replenish it.
Wow. Okay. So let's talk about the opportunities. Where are the opportunities specifically, and maybe a dollar amount? What amount of money are you looking for? That, could somebody come with, you know, $100,000, $50,000, $30,000, $1 million? What's the minimum and what's the max?
The minimum is, you know, with $25,000, you can get in on some of these opportunities. And then there's really no limit. I mean, like I said, the opportunities are endless there. So sky's the limit, basically.
Okay. And you did mention opportunities. Let's talk a little bit more about the opportunities. Why do you think Cape Verde is a good business and investment opportunity for people in the world?
Cape Verde is all the economic indicators and social indicators, environmental indicators, I mean, across the board, is top three in Africa and probably top 5 or 10 in the world.
Really?
Is indicated, yes. Cape Verde recently joined last year the World Trade Organization, so it has to abide to a lot of the international and national business, what's the word I'm looking for, business guidelines, and also been admitted as a special envoy into the European Union. And again, this helps reinforce the confidence of investors that, you know, when they do invest their money, that it's regulated by the WTO, and it's also in guidelines with some of the EU standards.
Mm-hmm. So specific industries, again, your opportunities are what specific industries?
In hotel and condominium development,
okay.
Maritime transportation, fishing, and then also with providing the materials for construction and hotel and restaurant supplies and anything to do with the development of the country.
Okay. Now, why haven't I heard about Cape Verde before? Why is it such a secret, and now we're starting to find out more? Why is that?
Well, Cape Verde, for one, is in the Atlantic side. And it's, you know, Africa as a whole, there's a lot of misperception and conception about Africa. People tend to just bundle it as one. But there's actually 50, almost 60 countries, separate countries in Africa, and they're all distinct of their own and all autonomous and all you know, have their own rules and regulations and different flavors. Cape Verde being probably the smallest nation in Africa, you know, was pretty much, you know, on a down low.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you really be successful there? Because I mentioned this with Mike, and Mike, I'm going to bring you on to ask Nelson a couple of questions. But can you really be successful? You have any? What success stories can you share with us already that you've experienced or?
The business and investment climate is almost as secure as investing here in the U.S. Again, any due diligence that you would apply in either partnering up or entering into any business venture in the U.S. Still would apply in Cape Verde, so you still have to do your homework and see who you're getting with and what you're getting into. It's a safe environment to invest in. It's a growing environment to invest in. And then now is the time. I advise everybody to get there before it's too late.
Get there before it's too late. That's what I put on the header. So let me come back. So we don't have to worry about the military taking over this island or another country coming over to.
No, one good thing about Cape Verde is that, you know, it's 10 islands, it's off the coast, so it doesn't have any neighbors, so there's no border conflicts. And again, there's no some of the, you know, major pitfall of most of the African countries that you hear about in the news, and usually you only hear the bad part, is if they have natural resources like oil, diamond, and then, you know, usually the Western world comes in and creates some chaos. But Cape Verde does not have any of these natural resources. The natural resources of Cape Verde are its people, its beaches, and sun around the clock.
Okay. But isn't that a disadvantage that they don't have natural resources? Is that the reason why they're coming out and inviting people to come invest with them?
No, it's I think it's actually proven to be an advantage for them. Like
exactly.
I said, they've been a stable democracy and the most stable democracy in Africa. Top three in Africa in all indicators, whether it's human resource, economic, social, and then top 5 or 10 in the world.
Okay. Now we got about 10 minutes left. I have a few more questions to ask you. How far is Cape Verde from its neighbor, I guess the continent of Africa? How long is it?
It's about 600 kilometers, 650 kilometers. So it's not really far.
How many miles is that? Because I don't have my calculator in front of me.
I don't have my calculator either.
How long does it take to
Google it?
Okay, how does somebody get from the island of Cape Verde to Africa? How long does it take to? Do you go by boat or you go by plane or?
By plane, you can pretty much. Whenever I go, I fly out of Boston because it's the only place that you can get a direct flight, and it's about half hour.
How long does it take? How long does it take?
About six and a half hours. Direct flight from Boston to Cape Verde. And then, from other areas, you usually have to go to Europe or some other place in Africa, then come back down.
If somebody wants to travel from, I guess, Cape Verde to Africa, that continent, the closest country, how long would it take to get to Africa from there?
The closest country is Senegal, and that's about an hour flight.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, a lot of people that... if they are going to be traveling to Africa, chances are they're going to stop in Cape Verde.
Ah, okay. That's another reason, and you mentioned that earlier. So, okay, we haven't heard about Cape Verde. What countries are doing business there right now? I call it like the first wave. What companies have discovered your...
Yes, obviously it's the European countries. It started with the Portuguese, then the Italians, then the Spaniards. The second wave, if you want to call it that, were the British, the Irish, the Netherlands, and Germans. And then now we're finding the third wave is the Chinese and the Dubai folks.
Dubai and China.
So,
wow.
So now you can see how it's becoming a race, basically, to develop this island.
So is it, where's the United States in this? Why are they not major players?
Well, the United States... as a whole, unfortunately, in Africa region, is slow to act, now trying to catch up. But other countries, European countries, and China and others are way ahead of them. And in fact, the biggest Chinese embassy in Africa is located in Cape Verde.
Wow, that's very interesting. Mike and I were talking about why China has to be a major player is a lack of natural resources. So, wow, that's very interesting. So you mentioned due diligence. Let me ask my last question for you, then I want to bring Mike in. But first of all, what is your website?
Website is www.globalee.us.
Okay, one more time for the listeners.
www.globalee.us. .us, that's Global Entrepreneurial Endeavors, so just Global EE for short, .us.
Okay, so you mentioned due diligence. So, you know, you've met some of the political players and the business people in Cape Verde. So what is your what is your due diligence? What would you recommend, and how are you going about picking your strategic partners and alliances?
The basic due diligence that you would do before you partner with anybody in the U.S., definitely as a minimum, you would do also in Cape Verde or any other country for that matter. But the first and foremost is to understand the particular culture, to look at the law structures, and then also look at, you know, if they abide by international laws, and then all the specific areas. For example, there's specific laws that entails in the fishing industry, in the condo, in the hotel, or any transportation. So you give it the due diligence, and don't have any surprises. You know, you go ahead and buy a ship that's, let's say, 100 feet long. Come to find out that the maximum allowed for inter-island is 90 feet. That's due diligence.
Do your homework, okay? Hey, Mike, are you still on the call here? Would you like to have a question? Do you have a question for Nelson?
I have more. So first, I'd like to say good evening to Nelson.
Good evening, Mike.
And I was just enjoying exactly how he described Cape Verde and how he also described the question that you answered earlier, Ken, about the challenges that we could face from the political structure. And Nelson made it a very good point that each country there has its own type of a political system, and that the most stable one is actually where his passion is, Cape Verde. And I love that fact. So each business meeting or partnership would be structured, from my standpoint, strategically different from the other.
Must be a plane or whatever.
Just getting a little bit of feedback here.
Great comment.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
But it's a carbon copy. All my comments would be what Nelson has shared with the listening audience is almost a carbon copy to what you and I was discussing and some of the issues that need to be looked in as far as due diligence with your government, who's your partner, and what the needs and the resources. And the key final note that I'd like to make is the fact that no, Cape Verde is not at a deficit. It's an advantage for an investor who is a producer, who can bring products and trade to the table. Yes, they may import almost a high percentage of their goods and services, but that can work to an advantage of an American corporation.
Okay, all right. I just thought about one other question. Crime. I'm originally from Detroit, Michigan, so I've been there. Then I got the T-shirt. What about crime? Is there crime in Cape Verde? People have to worry about that stuff. Nelson, did we lose Nelson? Hello.
We may have, but you know.
Okay.
If I may just pick up on it, I'm going to be looking closely at that and considering that even in my partnershiping with the various countries, because it's just as I was in a recent meeting with Nelson, and he says your due diligence is going to be most important in who you structure your deal with. And there'll be deals coming from all different directions, but we have to see what is the legal structure. What is the, what are the crime elements that we deal with? What is the ethics and the character of the individuals that we'll be partnering with? So yes, crime is a global issue that we have to address even here in America. But I would say it probably, from my guess, and I'll be talking with the Cape Verdeans when I get to Ghana, that would be one of the issues that I'll bring back some questions with. And I'll probably have a watch list for you, Ken, when I come return.
Oh, man, I'm looking forward to it. We got 1 minute remaining. I do want to ask, the last question, perhaps. And for African Americans, people of color, making an investment in Africa, Cape Verde, what does that mean to you, or what do you think? What's the opportunity for people of color to make an investment in Africa?
Ken, I think this is a dream, and it's an American-African dream to be a successful black entrepreneur in America and from the birthplace of Africa, there's something that's drawing me back to Africa, totally different from any place I've ever gone or been drawn to on a business mission. And I think that they will gladly open their arms and receive me because I'm bringing more than just a product to the table. I'm bringing a person with character, ethics, and a history that traces back to the motherland.
Wow, well said, well said. That's Mike McNair, McNair International. McNair International, we were talking with Nelson Greger of Global Entrepreneurial Endeavors. Check out the website for him. It's globally.us, and that's his website. So, Mike, again, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ken.
Nelson Greger. I know he's out there, but thank you very much for taking part of this. Parting thoughts?
It's been a pleasure.
Mike?
I thank you very much, Ken, for this opportunity. Again, I look forward to my return. We'll have a wealth of knowledge and information to share with your listening audience. Thank you.
I'm going to require you to come back on the show coming from the airport to do your report. Excellent.
By all means.
Anyway, that is the show. What have you learned today? And more importantly, how are you going to apply it to what you've learned today? How are you going to apply what you've learned? Specifically, what action steps will you implement to improve your business and increase your profitability? Mike's showing you how he's doing it. Nelson's showing you how his companies are doing it. So if you're looking for a second opinion, you want to maximize your business opportunity, you want to learn best practices for profitability, you've come to the right coach. Ken, the Passion Entrepreneur, your Chief Profitability Officer. As you know, with E3C, you've got access to over 300, that's why I said 300 profit and sales ideas, over 60 different business courses, quizzes, surveys, forums, and over 25 business and sales aids. Last year, and Mike knows about this, but last year we connected over 500 business-to-business connections. And this year we've introduced about 100 businesses with E3C Connect. We do an online networking session every Tuesday morning from 8 to 9. That's Eastern Standard Time, 8 to 9. So if you're interested in connecting with other passionate entrepreneurs like Mike and Nelson, just contact me via the podcast page or through Blog Talk Radio. So if you like this podcast, please share with a friend, a business associate, if you want to help them improve their profitability. If you've got an idea, if you want to be on the show, definitely reach me. And don't forget to check out the website, E3C website, Smart Advantage Coaching, my podcast page, which is e3c.podomatic, and then my blog, e3c.typepad.com. This has been Ken Brown, the Passion Entrepreneur, your profitability officer. Dare to be great, be remarkable, be extraordinary, and stay profitable. And let me put Brian Hundley's music on. That's the bumper music. He's with New Line Music. And as we take you out again, thank you very much, Mike. We're going to put this music on, and we'll see you next time.